parallel paradox called the doxolil.
Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down through the shit coins. Hot damn, I'm up 20 bands. Blesses once again, like ooh, ooh, ooh. My account's at an all-time high. When big bulls hard, make bearers die. Eat Milky Bar, so the price is gonna fly away. Today, I pray. Got my bags packed, only wish you had that. Try to tell the normies they ain't listen, how they sat, sat. Big BTC, lil bro E, GRT. I've been telling y'all to grab that. Bought link, I ain't even do no research. Carry round bags so heavy that my knees hurt. Please sir, this is for my family. I've been buying daily for prosperity. Okay, you got your suicide stack. All in Bitcoin, I don't need no cash. Fuck cockbucks, they suck. I don't wanna pay stub. You can keep the cash on my stack until that day comes. Lambo, moonshot, I believe since day one. Even I'm finna pump this shit to Mars, no need to say none. If you've been on the sidelines, I'm gonna win, it's my time. Helping on you fast here, hold my bags and watch them decline. Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down through the shit coins. Hot damn, I'm up 20 bands. Lessons once again, like ooh, ooh, ooh. My account's at an all-time high. When big bull taught and bearers die. Eat Milky Bar, so the price is gonna fly away. Today, today I pray. Shout out all the homies who just stack and stack. Mighty Vent, Matt Odell, Mr. Swan and Max. Every fellow OG, RCT, Moondart, R&R, Loops, and Kobe. If you don't know me, this is strong hands only. Have fun staying poor if you capitulate, homie. I could never do that, hardly ever go flat. Smart team won't do full center for him, can. I'm long with a whole stack, I'm Giga Brain Bull Chat. Okay, here's what happened before the IRS mad. I went full bull tard and the bearers died. It sounds tall tales, but it's no lie. See, I lost all my money in the exchange hack and the boating accident that happened after that. Plus, I'm down a couple racks from when I bought Zcash. It's okay, I'll write it off, whatever helps the tax, yeah. Waking up, I check the price of Bitcoin. Scrolling on down through the shit coins. Hot damn, another 20 bands. Blessings once again, like ooh, 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 ooh. My account's at an all-time high. When big bull taught, make bearers die. Eat Milky Bar, so the price went and flew away. But that was yesterday.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, everybody. And welcome to episode 83 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I want to say good morning to everybody who's tuning in to us, everybody in the audience. We have Bob up here on the stage. Good morning. I see we Wade on the Bitcoin Alaska handle, Jeff, Chivas, Nemo, Greg, Daniel, BitCat, Jason, Jerry T. Jason, you're not the Jason everybody's talking about on X, are you? Just joking there. But one US dollar buys you 920 Satoshis. Crazy, crazy. The price is just going parabolic. So we had to play that song by El Captain Youth. And just in case anybody was wondering, I did reach out to him to make sure we had permission to play the song on air. And he was more than happy to allow us to do that. So huge thank you to him. If you don't follow him, give him a follow on X or go download some of his music. He's got some funny songs about Bitcoin. But we've had some great guests on the show for the last couple of days. And so we're going to recap everything that we kind of, that happened that we didn't have a chance to kind of go over. Some big things happening in Europe, with some of the parliament members speaking about Bitcoin. The Chinese bonds are just completely falling apart. So Bob, I'm going to try and reach out to you with that one. The Canadian government looks like it's starting to collapse. Trudeau's leaving. Their finance minister resigned. So just a ton of things to go over. But while we still have people falling into the room, or filing into the room, sorry, refilling their coffee, your bone broth, I just want to make sure everyone understands the reason we do this every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. And it's to show the world what they are realizing every single day is that Bitcoin is unstoppable. It doesn't answer to anybody. It is completely decentralized and it gives the power back to the people. And we can start seeing this change take place. And that's what we're going to be focusing a lot on today. It's just this, the power of this movement and why what we're doing here with the Bitcoin veterans is just so important. Allowing the people to break free from the chains, to get off this hamster wheel and have financial independence. And with that financial independence and freedom, comes the most sacred thing, and that's your time. The ability to do whatever you would like, choose to do whatever you'd like with your time. And so that's why Bitcoin, that's why I want to try and get everybody on a Bitcoin standard to make sure that they can get this and get it before it's too late. So Bob, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to you. How was your afternoon, evening yesterday?
Awesome. I got to meet with a bank, a community bank regarding, potentially providing custody services. As I was talking about, I think last week about, multi-institutional custody where you're not just straight up custodying with the bank. They're just the key agent. And then I also got to talk to a construction and development company and they are looking at, both adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet and, as well as when they go to investors for these development projects that they offer investment in, looking at making Bitcoin a part of those deals. So engaging conversations, lots of good questions, and all while Bitcoin is pushing all new all-time highs yesterday as well as now this morning again. So a good time to be a Bitcoiner.
Absolutely. And there's never really a bad time to be a Bitcoiner. We just kind of have some extra highs and some more, a higher platform to stand on when the price is just ripping like it is. But, I want to touch back a little bit on what you said there, Bob, with the bank. Is it so I imagine it's just a credit union, correct? Because to my understanding the traditional banks aren't able to touch it.
Yeah. You know, it seems, in a conventional sense, for sure they cannot, custody it and have it on their balance sheet. However, if you're doing it where they are a minority key, this would be a way around that. And so this particular conversation was with a community bank and, you know, in explaining how it would work with regulators, this seems like a far less of a lift with regulators than actually straight up custodying the asset. So being a key agent is something that I think will probably be the first way that you see banks actually get involved in any way. And I think maybe even providing some reporting services related to the Bitcoin blockchain for their customers is another place where I could see them participating.
Yeah, well, that's what Bob Burnett believes, is that the banks are really going to start trying to utilize the block space because they know that it's going to be imperative for them if they want to complete financial transactions. So that's his whole thesis, is that there's going to be a huge race for that. So it'll be interesting to see how it develops. The other thing you'd mentioned with the development company, I think this is going to be moving forward, probably not in the next 12 or 24 months, but definitely within the next 4 years. I foresee that every loan that's attached to it, whether it's a mortgage, just traditional, you know, single family dwelling or for commercial, is going to have some kind of Bitcoin attached to it. And the reason I believe that is going back to Jeff Booth. I listened to the What Bitcoin Did podcast. He was on it last weekend. And again, his thesis is that everything goes to zero against Bitcoin. And I think we're hitting a new phase where we're going to start seeing these prices start to decrease, and especially in housing. Housing is just unaffordable for the vast majority of the citizens here. And I believe there's going to have to be a point where it just starts to go back down, and no one's going to want to lend out a loan that they know the house over the next 25, 30 years is going to depreciate in value. So they're going to want to hold on to some collateral on the back end to make sure that, again, they're able to retain what they lent out. And I do think that you're going to see Bitcoin becoming a really integral part in the bank lending with real estate. Does anybody have any counter thoughts to that, or do you think that's going to be the way?
Yeah, I think you're right. I do think that it'll actually come in the commercial space first. And you know, whether it's balance sheet, accumulation of Bitcoin or raising investment and, tying it to real estate deals, I think that will probably happen first, just because, to be honest, I mean, that is a far better, use of the bank's time. There's just bigger dollars flowing through that. And so I would guess that they wouldn't concentrate on consumer loans as much as they would commercial, but that's just my opinion from, you know, the multiple banks that I have conversations with.
So then how quick do you think they're going to start tying it? Because when you look at the commercial real estate, like, it is just hemorrhaging. You're seeing all these office spaces getting just sold for pennies on the dollar for what they were bought, you know, 3-4 years ago. So if you had to put a time frame, Bob, how quickly do you think you start to see this?
You know, financial institutions and regulators are slow to move. If there's clear legislation or regulation that comes out of the Trump administration, certainly this next cycle, if that continues to be delayed or hampered in any way, these guys are very, set in their ways. And so I think it would be a heavy lift to have any bank do it. They're scared to disrupt their core business or to get in trouble with regulators. A big part of banking is risk management, especially if you're lending out money. You want to make sure your borrowers are sound, especially if you're doing fractional reserve banking. So I really do think that this will all be driven by, clear rules, right? Whether it's, laws passed by Congress and signed by the president, or, regulators softening up, you know, these rules. And so I think, it's going to take some time, certainly, but, you know, if we can at least get, you know, with a void of laws and regulations, if we can at least get banks starting to see that they can participate from a reporting standpoint, and also potentially participating in custody, but not doing custody, that's going to speed up the process. And the way I see it is, it's reporting and, you know, fractional custody, then it's full on custody, then it's allowing people to buy and sell through your financial institution. And then it would be, lastly, using it as collateral to, you know, basically lend dollars out against Bitcoin in all of these creative ways that we could imagine.
Yeah, I do, looking at who Trump's putting into his administration, you know, especially with Howard Lutnick being in charge, because that's what he wants. He wants to create Bitcoin treasury and lending with Cantor Fitzgerald. And so I do think you're gonna get clear legislation that states what they can and can't do, especially with Gensler getting out. Again, I do see pro Bitcoin legislation, and so I do think that within the 4-year time period of Trump's administration, we will see banks starting to use this for commercial real estate. But you're right. I do think they don't want to be too far out on the risk curve without having clear guidance. We had a couple more listeners jump in, so I just want to say good morning to Shane. You're more than welcome to come up here, sir. Eomar, Randy Kelly in the audience. We got Rental. So good morning, everybody. So some big news I want to talk about, and it's pretty big just because of their negative stance towards Bitcoin this entire time. And I'm talking about the European Union. So there was, a French, I'm trying to think of the correct word for her. I can't find it on here, but there was a French parliament member speaking at the European Union. It must have been last night or this morning. And she told that the European Union needs to establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve while rejecting the proposed adoption of a digital euro. So that's really big news. She said it's time to stop the totalitarian temptations by the ECB calling for a shift from regulatory overreach in crypto to adopting the decentralized nature of Bitcoin. And yesterday as well, you had a former German finance minister criticize the chancellor of Germany for failing to incorporate Bitcoin into its financial strategy. Now remember, they sold, I think it was 50,000 Bitcoin during the summer, right around $50,000. So they would have doubled their reserves if they, the value of their reserves if they would have just held on to it. And the German minister specifically cites the US as an example for taking the lead with pro-Bitcoin adoption. So I want to spend some time on this just because we're hitting a phase that we all knew was going to happen, and it was going to be gradually and then suddenly. And I truly believe that we are in that suddenly phase. I personally don't really believe that the price movements we're seeing, this huge push, is coming specifically from nation states adopting it. I'm not saying that they're not purchasing it, but I don't think this is the major push. I think we're about to hit in 30, 40 days when Trump takes office. I think we're going to start seeing some really craziness take shape with that. And again, I'm just the buying pressure coming. I don't feel like it's coming from nation states yet. Not saying they're not, but I just don't think this volumes. I think this is just institutions. I think we'll all know when the nation states are doing it. And again, the reason I find this so interesting is because you have Trudeau of Canada looks like he's going to be stepping down in April from the prime minister. The finance minister of Canada stepped down yesterday, just because she can't get the job done. You have the French government that's in collapse. The UK government is canceling elections. The Syrian government just collapsed. South Korean government is on a verge of collapse. You have the China bond yields just completely collapsing over the last 60 days. And now we start having Trump cabinet being formed. So there's definitely some changes going on, and I'm going to open it up to the panel to get your take on everything and what you think is going on. And are we at that suddenly phase now?
Where to start? Anybody can feel free to jump in or talk over me, but maybe if we start off with the ECB, I mean, I think one of the big things with the European Central Bank is that they are continuing to, you know, even faster than the US, decrease interest rates and debase their currency. And so I think that, you know, because of their energy problems, we're seeing an accelerated decline there versus, you know, what we're seeing in the United States. So it's definitely something interesting for Bitcoiners to, pay attention to. And the one thing that's interesting to me is I know a few people in Europe and, you know, we have conversations regarding Bitcoin, and a lot of them who I'm, you know, just friends with, it's not really even on their radar, or they are often just not able to save in any way because of the rampant inflation and debasement of the euro. So, you know, every dollar is spoken for, and, you know, they'd much rather go on vacation to Northern Italy or wherever they're used to going, to Turkey or, you know, these other places, Portugal, where it's a little bit less expensive, than they would give that up. That's their free dollars, or free euros, I should say. And they'd rather spend it on that than save anything in Bitcoin, because it's kind of their one treat for the year.
I think you're right with that, but I do think that we need to kind of look at the implications of these nations putting it onto their balance sheet, like using it as an asset to strengthen their reserves, their dollars, the euro, whatever currency you're going to utilize it in. Because again, the reason you're getting all of these the currencies are going to zero is because they're just, they're out of control with the money printer. They're spinning, there's no budgets, and going to this and putting Bitcoin on your balance sheet, it's not going to be a fix as soon as they do it. It's going to take time, but as they start to see it and they see the effects and the ripple effects that take place from them carrying it, their dollars will start to strengthen. They'll be able to start investing in back inside their countries. It'll allow the citizens to have, you know, more faith in their governments. And so again, I do think that we're starting to see this phase, and it's going to start taking off really, really quick. Jordan, Shane, or AC, do you guys have any thoughts on it?
I'm gonna, you got me while I was chewing.
I guess I'll go ahead and by all means swallow there, Jordan. Yeah, you guys really paint a rosy picture of what's going on around the world right now. And I can't help but be, I think, still extremely hopeful about what's going on. I was watching the guys over at Simply Bitcoin yesterday, and they were talking about kind of the cycle of human emotion that rides the ups and downs of what we're seeing in this marketplace. And, you know, there's hope, there's belief, there's, you know, euphoria, and then you kind of come down on the other side when the market starts to correct a little bit. And, you know, it looks like, you know, we've obviously come out of disbelief. We are, you know, I think we, you know, now again, we believe that, you know, there's some hope. And I think we're just transitioning out of that hope side into, this, you know, this side where we're not all there yet, right? Like, you know, we're seeing these gains. We're seeing, you know, these countries that are being forced to bend the knee again, you know, much like we saw BlackRock, you know, have to turn around and, you know, Larry Fink had to eat shit in front of the entire world after saying that none of his people wanted exposure to this asset. So now, you know, now that we've got all of these, you know, world currencies and, you know, major ETFs out there that are considering, you know, going into Bitcoin, they know they can't ignore it any longer. And I think you're right, Coleman. I think we're shifting. I think we're out of the phase one, you know, the accumulation and front running. And I think we're definitely moving into a different phase of hyper Bitcoinization now. And, you know, how fast that happens, I'm not that guy with a crystal ball. I'm never going to tell you guys like, oh, it's going to be this by the end of 2025. Like I'm just not that guy, but I do see this as the beginning of something more than institutional. I think this is, you know, where you're going to see more and more adoption. And I think probably held within your own lives. I can't get away from it, guys. Like I'm going to tell you, the amount of time that I'm spending with individuals, whether it's friends or now, you know, friends of friends that are interested in moving their portfolios into Bitcoin or moving, you know, their personal assets into Bitcoin, it is just, it's rampant. And that's a huge sign when you have normal people that have not been on this train at all, now seeing this at an all time high going, you know what, you know, let's sit down and talk about it. I had an entire gym full of jiu-jitsu guys, you know, and they'll stay around, they'll roll after. This was like 6 o'clock last Friday, the 6 a.m. class. And, you know, to have everybody there just sitting around asking questions about this and then, you know, putting together a larger talk that we're going to do, where we're going to do a presentation. We're going to, you know, walk everybody through this. People who are personal investors, people who are business investors, we're going to have these conversations. And I think that's probably going around a lot more. If I'm having these conversations, I imagine a lot of other people are being asked about it. Yeah, I think we've passed phase one, man. And I definitely think that, you know, when we look at what's going on around the world with all these institutions just struggling and the dollar dying and debasing their own currency, which is, you know, fractional as well. What other choice do they have at this point? At least have a look at it. At least, you know, turn around and really look at it. And I think I'd point out one last thing is it wasn't long ago. I think it was just a couple of weeks where, China had executed their, you know, their main economic advisor. And I imagine he is the same guy that pulled the plug on mining in China, you know, and kind of short circuited the 2017 crowd, you know, going into 2020, 2021. You know, when you make mistakes that large, especially in, you know, communist countries where it's going to cost that country, you know, literally billions, if not trillions of dollars in the future, you know, and they're executing guys for making the wrong decisions economically over there. I think that is, you know, it's not great for the guy, but obviously it's a very bullish sign for Bitcoin.
Yeah, I've also had people reach out just yesterday, a guy, local guy who, I don't know his exact job, but like he's in like the financial management type job or consulting. And he reached out initially to ask about MicroStrategy stock and what I knew about that, knowing that I was a Bitcoiner. So like, you know, I tried to steer him down the right path and kind of tell him the pros and cons of the exposure to MicroStrategy, but then why do that when you could just get the overall asset? But just the fact that you do have people reaching out, asking more questions that are, I mean, I don't want to say like a total normie, but like definitely in that financial world and just used to the TradFi thing, and at least MicroStrategy and what they're doing is there to kind of be a signal to them like, well, maybe I should take this other thing a little more seriously. It's the first time that I've had that happen to me kind of in that realm, somebody who wasn't necessarily like into Bitcoin or crypto in general asking questions, just kind of more on the normie realm.
AC or Eomar, are you guys having these conversations as well, or are people starting to bring it up to you?
Yeah, I had somebody mention it at the bus stop the other day, actually. You know, I don't orange pill too many people. You know, I'm not tightest with the bus crew there, but you know, I have mentioned it before. You know, I've mentioned like Bitcoin mining and stuff like that. So I think it was when it first was breaking around 100K. One of the more interesting conversations, I just remembered it. I have a coworker who's a very big, like Bitcoin skeptic. And, you know, after we reached 100K and kind of stayed there for a while, his tone was a lot different. Like it was more of like, hey, let me try to understand what's going on here versus, you know, like this isn't, you know, like instead of labeling like, Bitcoin a Ponzi scheme or something like that, you know, is a much more like, hey, like how does this work? Like, how come, you know, like he was asking about how like Bitcoin would adapt to, what was it? Willow, the Google, quantum computer and stuff. And he was asking questions about that. So it's just a completely different tone of like, hey, let me try to understand this versus like, let me argue against it. You know what I mean? So, it was interesting to see that shift come. Cause like, it's been like a very common topic. Like he's you know, pretty well read in like economics and stuff. But a very strong like Bitcoin skeptic. So it was interesting to see that kind of shift towards, you know, more of a seeking to understand as opposed to, you know, just arguing against.
Yeah. And I'll say that, you know, along similar lines, the night that we hit 100K, I was surprised to have a couple guys that I went to university with. And let's just say that we haven't spoke in like 10 years, but I've been pretty vocal and outspoken, at least in my circles for a while, reach out to me. And it made me laugh because, you know, this is a typical comment that most Bitcoiners hear from people from normies or pre-corners or whatever you want to call them. He's like, hey, I think, you know, it hit 100K. I think I'm too late to Bitcoin. What do you think about XRP? And I just, you know, it fires me up. And yeah, I have a lot of stuff in the queue like, hey, that's horseshit, that's dog shit, that's a shit coin. This is the reason why trends to zero. Insiders are always going to rug you. You know, a lot of the stuff that the Bitcoiners are already familiar with. But Coleman, I also want to pivot back to one of the things that you had mentioned about nation state adoption. I actually think I'll take the opposite view. I actually think that, they are probably starting to accumulate, but in very low amounts. And the reason I think that is we don't see a lot of the accumulation, whether it's from MicroStrategy or if it's from the 11 ETFs that are out there. We don't see that rampant price, but we do see that they're buying, you know, sometimes 10 or 20x the daily issuance, and it's not affecting the price. And so I think that nation states have probably figured out some of the cheat code of reaching out to the OTC desks, and they're accumulating in that way. So I think that it's going to happen. I think that we are on the verge of a suddenly, and all it takes is, you know, some of these OG whales to stop selling their Bitcoin to OTCs, and then for available supply on exchanges to start to disappear, to really get into that suddenly phase.
So let's spend some time on this. I agree with you, AC, and I'm sorry if I didn't make my stance clear. I do think that they're just nibbling at it, nation states, but I don't think they're the main driver of this current bid underneath Bitcoin right now. So that's what I'll say with that. But I think the OTC desks and everybody that's selling, I bet you they close their purses up and they don't sell any more Bitcoin the second you hear the United States or Donald Trump create an executive order to purchase Bitcoin. You would have zero incentive to sell Bitcoin at that point if you know that a nation state is trying to acquire it. Just hold on, drive that price up. So I think you'd mention it, so I'll agree with you, that once they admit that, it's going to be complete just bonkers. You won't, no one is prepared for what's going to happen. And Jack Maulers was on Tim Pool's podcast, I guess it was over the weekend. And I have a short clip I want to play for everybody who might have missed it. But Jack Maulers talks about, he has information or a source that says Donald Trump is going to create an executive order on his first day to purchase Bitcoin. So it's about 45 seconds. I'll go ahead and play it right here.
Going to build Bitcoin position with that. And it's 1 million Bitcoin is the target. I also know Trump is looking at a day one executive order.
Day one executive order for a Bitcoin reserve for the United States?
Yeah, but so I know that there's people looking at the Dollar Stabilization Act. It gives the president wide discrepancy to protect the dollar, and there's potential to use a day one executive order to purchase Bitcoin. It wouldn't be at the size and scale of 1 million coins, but it would be a significant position, and it'd be a message that the United States, listen, here's what I think isn't talked about enough about the strategic goal.
So we had Matthew Pines on yesterday, and I tried to get it out of him on the show, but he thinks that there is a way for Trump to go ahead and do this. He doesn't recommend doing this way because, again, another administration comes in, they can just go ahead and cancel it out. So having legislation, a law in place is the best. But my argument would be that Trump is going to do this to front run everybody so he can start getting it and then worry about the logistics and getting everything done. So it's going to be a long-term play on the back end. Trump loves to put his name on everything he touches. There is nothing more than I think he would love to do than be the president, the first president to start a strategic Bitcoin reserve and cause FOMO across the entire world. And I do not think that that is priced in. I still think you look at Poly market odds, they're below 40%. There is nobody that is prepared for this. And again, if I was selling Bitcoin, The second I heard that the government is going to start purchasing it in mass, I stopped selling until the price starts going high enough for me to make a difference. Does anybody have any different takes? Am I wrong on this? What are your thoughts?
I remember a couple of years ago when people were saying that, you know, we're not there yet. You know, this is going to be another cycle or two before we hit, the FOMO of nation states, and everybody was like, yeah, you know, we're years and years out. And I got to say, you know, this is the one place that I didn't see, you know, Trump coming in and doing this, and winning and talking about Bitcoin at all. I mean, I really didn't that. So, you know, for anybody to go, yeah, you know, Trump, I had Trump on my 2025 bingo card coming in and issuing either an executive order or working with both Congress and the Senate, to get this, you know, strategic reserve passed. And I don't think anybody can sit there and logically, you know, say over a year or so ago that they had that on their bingo card for, and so yeah, if it wasn't on the bingo card, it's definitely not priced in. And as soon as the U.S. moves in this way and they have the world reserve currency and they have the new world reserve money, yeah, I mean, all bets are off at that point. I mean, and you just look at the last couple of weeks. I mean, I was with Jordan, you know, having a couple bourbons on Wednesday, 2 weeks ago, and we're already, you know, $8,000 in terms of an all-time high, higher than we were then. That's incredible. And I think, you know, because we're sitting there going like, hey, yeah, we were promised $1 million Bitcoin by now. I think we're impatient. I think, you know, there's a lot of us that, you know, have been in this for a while. We got, you know, Shortcut. You know, if you're part of the 2017, you know, crowd out there, you got Shortcut a little bit because of the China, you know, coming offline for mining and everything. So, you know, to see this happening now, this could be one of those compounded cycles, and everybody, you know, talks about super cycle, but it really could be. I think it is. I think we're going to see things that are going to blow all of our minds. And when that rush begins, there's that old saying that money doesn't wait, you know, as other currencies are dying and faith is gone, because let's face it, that's the only thing that's holding up the US dollar right now is faith and a bunch of boomers that hold, you know, the dollar capital, so to speak. But in reality, it's nothing. It's literally counterfeit money that's been printed out of thin air that means nothing. And when the first oil-rich nation, like an OPEC nation, says, we're done taking this crap money, you guys can pay us in Bitcoin, then it's really over. I mean, energy changes everything. You change energy, and you're talking about the reduction of energy prices across the board for people who are invested in Bitcoin from here until eternity. So yeah, this, I don't think any of it's priced in, and I think we're going to see some wild things that are going to blow people's minds.
Yeah, I just want to point out, back in January when I first wrote about, like my thoughts on, well, some of my thoughts on like our failing monetary system. Back then, I think it was December of last year, actually, Saudi Arabia had started a partnership with, I think SBI is the company out of Japan, which is like I know they have like a bank, like a, you know, quote, crypto bank. So along with like the fact that they were exploring like other, currencies and stuff, I think there is like definitely some movement towards that area. It's not just like coming out of thin air and like the risk of it. When I wrote that article, the Saudi held U.S. Treasury reserves, were significantly lower than they had been in the past. And I think part of that is, you know, there's a combination of things. There's the actions we did against Russia in terms of, you know, if you don't listen to most, then you don't get access to your money. And then there's also like the less nefarious or ominous, things like investments and stuff. But it's just interesting to see, like, they aren't holding that as much as they had in the past. And, you know, they're at least aware of, you know, the possibilities of Bitcoin and stuff. So, the same as like, you know, we aren't, you know, we mentioned it before, but, you know, nations aren't going to just come out and tell you. They're going to try to keep that as close to their chest, for as long as possible, because once the cat's out of the bag, like you guys were saying, you know, it's going to be a full on race, to accumulate Bitcoin. So, I wouldn't be surprised. I know that we're going back and forth on whether countries are accumulating or not. I think they are. I think that it might be at like a smaller scale. And then there's also like, you know, in a lot of these countries, you know, the, I don't know the percentages. It'd be great if either of you guys, if any of you guys know, but I'd be curious to know how many people have, Bitcoin on reserves as opposed, or on, exchanges as opposed to, self-custody. I know it's been moving off, but I'd be interested to know that because that's another avenue of, you know, these governments accumulating Bitcoin is, you know, making it pseudo legal in their country and then making it illegal and then seizing it off of all the exchanges. And then, you know, I think that's kind of China's route. They kind of sway back and forth between it being legal and illegal so that they can accumulate via their population.
Jordan, I saw your hand up, but to answer your question, Omar, 2.3 million Bitcoin on exchanges. Jordan, did you have your hand up, sir?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how other people are feeling about this situation, but I'm still like a little bit hesitant on whether or not they're going to allow Trump to be inaugurated or not. It's what some of the things that give me, some hope that like everything will go smoothly is that I would assume a lot of these financial institutions that are getting into Bitcoin, would kind of want everything to go smoothly and just in the market in general. You know, say what you will about how much the corporations, control the government. One aspect in this regard might be that they just want things to go over smoothly and they don't want a lot of chaos. But I kind of wonder, how many other people are maybe on the fence too, as far as like Bitcoin goes, knowing whether it's going to be something that the US government is moving in that direction or not. And so I wonder if that is kind of like holding up. Like I feel like there's a lot of people that really want to kind of go all in once Trump starts making these decisions, regardless of like the actual government starting to buy anything. If he says, yeah, we're going to, but it's going to be a year from now, I think that's enough to get people to start going into it. Not necessarily just governments themselves buying it. I think there's a lot of people kind of wanting to see where things play out. I mean, either way, I feel like Bitcoin is at an all-time low, historically speaking, as I look out into the future. So it doesn't really affect me, but I wonder how many other people that are kind of new to it are waiting to see how things go.
I'm not sure if they're really waiting to see what Trump's going to do if he's getting into office. I think the people that are hesitant right now on it are price sensitive in the fact that, you know, $108,000 is just too much for them. So they're going to see if they can get a lower reentry price. I think that's for retail.
Well, and that I will say that is 100% true because just yesterday I was talking to my Cairo. And he sold at like when we were near the previous all time highs, like when we were in like the 60,000s. And he was like, I'm going to buy back when it gets to 45. And I was like, dude, it's never going back to 45. And then just yesterday he was like, I'm going to buy back when it gets down to 50. And I'm like, dude, do you remember when you said that about 45? Like you buy it now and you just don't sell it. Like, and just so you're 100% right. There are people that are still looking at it. There are people that could have bought Manhattan real estate, but didn't because it seemed too high. But if they had done it, it would have paid off.
And you're absolutely right, Jordan. And to add to that, American HODL made a post last night or this morning, and he talked about when he just had his baby. He was sitting in the hospital and he had some cash saved up, and he was just waiting to, I guess, time the market to put into Bitcoin. And then as he was just holding his daughter, he's like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to put half into right now. We'll call it 5,000 of Bitcoin. He put it in, and then immediately within an hour, it dropped by like 50%. And so he felt horrible. He just couldn't live with himself, or he just like, just had so much regret. He actually just waited till his wife woke up, gave his wife the baby and started just pacing around and went for a long walk, and thought about everything. And he's like, no, you know what? I'm right. I'm not price sensitive. I'm going to go and I've done the research. I've done the work and I know how this is going to end up. It's going to go to millions one day. And so he went back in and put the rest of his money right into Bitcoin. He bought it right then. He said the price went down a little bit further after he did that. But again, he bought this at $5,000, $3,000, $2,000 a coin. You know, there's now, there's zeros added to his purchase. Again, so let that sink in. It might seem like 106 might seem like a high number. And what happens if it drops down to 90? What happens if it does drop down to 60? But in 4 years, like, is that price really going to matter to you? No, it's definitely going to be over 100. It's going to be, it might be closer to 600. It might be over 1 million. Nobody knows, but we just know that it's going to be higher in 4 to 5 years. So do not be price sensitive. And I've been trying to do a better with myself when I'm talking about the price of Bitcoin, talking about it in sats, making that number seem more appealing. Because a lot of people still don't realize that one Bitcoin is broken up into 100 million little pieces. And so putting it in that framework just makes it more appealing for people that are just price sensitive.
Here's a scientific fact. Bitcoin always goes down after you buy it. That's just a fact. It's a law of nature. It's in physics. You can look it up. Newton talked about it. But seriously, like, it kind of, in your perception, it does always go down because you buy it with conviction. So if it goes up a little bit, you're like, yeah, that's what I thought it would do. You only really notice it when it goes down. I try not to ever really pay attention to the price. And it's always the times that I'm not paying attention at all is when it just starts ripping. Like Shane mentioned earlier, me and him were hanging out at one of my buddy's house, just drinking some bourbon. And the only reason I knew it went over 100K is because I was getting my watch was blowing up with notifications from all the BV retards out there, talking about what the price was doing. And I was like, oh, hey guys, check out what just happened. Just a couple days ago as it was ripping past like 105, kind of the same thing. If you don't pay attention to it, it seems to go up because you're not stressed about it. But when you're stressed about it, all you notice is it going down. And so that's kind of what I mean by it's like a scientific fact that your perception is always going to see that. That's the psychology of just investing in general. So try just understand that and then buy and hodl. By the way, tomorrow's hodl day.
I did not know that. We'll have to bring that up on the show. But you're right. And one thing I would add to that, Jordan, is if you're really stressing out about the price, like if you're new into it and you're stressing about the price, you might be over allocated. Like again, everyone's goal should be getting to the left of the decimal to try to acquire one Bitcoin. And then when you get to that, then just start doing it in multiples. But when you're first getting out, you don't want to be buying strictly on price and FOMO because you will be the first person to sell when that price corrects 10, 15, 20%. So if a $5,000, $10,000 price fluctuation is going to cause you just complete heartache, you need to lower that entry position. You definitely need to just reduce your exposure and then study more, read books. Again, it's the holiday season. Give your friends and family books to read. Send them podcasts. Again, a lot of people are going to have some downtime over the next week. Let them catch up on your favorite podcasts. Point them to us, the Bitcoin Veterans. We have a lot of great signal on this space. We have a lot of very knowledgeable people joining us weekly. And so, again, there's no better place to point. And you don't have to be a veteran to listen to us. Again, as long as you're into Bitcoin only, we will welcome you with arms wide open. And no, that's not a Creed song. But really quick, I want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Don't leave that thing on paper. Check them out at punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. They will be joining us in Juneau at the Bitcoin Alaska conference. They'll be putting on a shooting course. And I believe they're going to be staying afterwards to do some private shooting lessons. So reach out to Wade at the Bitcoin Alaska handle. He's in the audience, and you can get some more details on that. I hope that's okay, Wade. and Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. And if you pay in Bitcoin, there's a potential for additional 10% off. So 15% off your order. BTCVETS, solosatoshi.com. And I mentioned it earlier, Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. Get there early, stay late. It is a family-friendly conference. It's going to be amazing. You are not going to want to miss this. BitcoinAlaska.org. And I just got to give them a shout-out. We had Michael Haft, Compass Coffee, join us last week on the show. I had mentioned that we were throwing a conference in Juneau, and he graciously said that he would donate all the coffee for that conference. So I know that him and Wade have been talking in the background, and it looks like everything got settled. So go show him some love. Give him a follow at least on X. I had ordered some coffee last week. It's arriving today. But definitely support Bitcoiners. Go out there, get some coffee from Compass Coffee.
And I just want to throw out, I actually ordered coffee when you first mentioned in the back channels he was coming on. I ordered some coffee. So it came right after he was on. And I had the Sumatra blend, and it was legitimately good coffee. Like I generally buy, what's the other one? Black Rifle coffee. Cause I, you know, just like we support Bitcoiners, I like to try to support fellow veterans and stuff too and their ventures. But I might have to make a switch because that blend, I don't know if it's that blend. I haven't really looked at the prices to know which one's more expensive or cheaper or whatever. But that coffee was phenomenal. I drink a lot of coffee, so I already tore through like the little can that I bought. So I'm probably gonna have to buy the whatever it is, 2-pound bag that he sells there. But it is good coffee. And they have like a Bitcoin blend, which I did not get because I didn't know it existed. But I will order that next time I make an order. Definitely, you know, give it a try. You know, from my experience, if at the very least, I know the Sumatra one is good. So if you're on the fence, buy that and drink that and you'll be happy.
Well, that's good to hear. And I didn't think the prices were too outrageous for their coffee. It seemed pretty in line. So again, support Bitcoiners. That's how we grow this community. Jordan, do you still?
As a coffee addict, it doesn't really matter to me. I'm still buying the coffee. So
Jordan, do you have your hand raised again or is it just stuck up?
It must just be stuck up.
All good. Tonight we had the Bitcoin video podcast, Bitcoin Veterans video podcast. We have Jack Donovan, the author of Way of Men, joining. So that will be 7 p.m. Eastern time. We will have the live stream here on X and on YouTube. So make sure you tune into that. That'll be a really good one. Shane, are you still up? I think you just dropped down. I'm not sure if this will be the last episode of the year. Jordan, let me know if I'm right or wrong on that. I don't think we'll have
one. Yeah, probably. I don't know. Maybe one, probably not one between Christmas and New Year. So this probably will be the last one of the year. I'm not 100% sure if we have anyone else scheduled from now till then, but either way, this is one I've been really looking forward to for a while, getting Jack Donovan on. We've been talking about his book, The Way of Men, and that whole series, really from just about the start of Bitcoin Veterans. So to get him on is pretty, pretty special. I'm excited.
Jordan, do you mind just telling for everyone who's unfamiliar what The Way of Men is about, what he discusses?
Yeah, I mean, he basically, to summarize it in a very complex, well, it's not that complex. It's pretty, he does a great job of explaining it, but there's a lot of people like in society now who want to be, good men, but he talks about how to be good at being a man. And those things are not always the same. You look at even some villains in movies and stuff, like, they may not be good men, but they're very good at being men as far as like they're going to take care of their families and they're going to do what needs to be done to take care of their tribe. And that's the big kind of focus on him is like you need a tribe. All these people, like we talk about prepping and being prepared for all these different contingencies, but you can't be a one man solo show out there if you're not going out in your community and building that group of men who are going to be needed in the, all these contingencies that we discussed. You're going to need a group of men to support because you can't pull security 24/7. At some point, you're going to need to sleep. You're not going to be able to provide all of the resources that you need. So if you want kind of like a very good blueprint and a starting out point of how to do this, basically what Jack Donovan describes in these books is becoming a Green Beret and building out your guerrilla network in the event something were to happen. And even if something doesn't happen, you just need that kind of support network of men helping each other out and improving society. That is what civilization is based on.
He's also extremely critical of what feminism has done to men and masculinity in our time. I think that's one of the, you know, kind of one of his starting points is, you know, he talks about, you know, how these men have just been emasculated, over and over and over and over again. And it's, you know, I think we've talked about it through, you know, different authors and things like that, but it is probably, I think the central issue of his book is kind of reclaiming masculinity and what that means. And I tell you what, I told Jordan about this, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, and he's like, what? I'm actually going to have to make some time to be on the show. So, probably going to be a great show tonight with Jack.
I'm going to correct you there. It is going to be a great show. So make sure you tune into that. It's going to be a good one. So again, 7 p.m. Eastern time. We are getting to the top of the hour, so I'm going to go ahead and pass it around the panel. Did you guys, is there anything else that's been going on the last week, over the weekend, going on today that we haven't covered, you want to spend some time on?
Jordan and Coleman, have you guys talked about the drones as far as a distraction?
So we had Matthew Pines on yesterday, and I tried to get coax him to give us some more information. I think he was holding his cards a little close to his chest and didn't really want to tell us everything. But I think you're right with that, Shane. And we can go in, and again, it's something that has to be addressed. So there's, again, I want to end it on a happy note. So we'll come back around to a more positive segment once we finish with this, but we need to talk about this and what's going on. And so yes, Shane, I do think that you're right that it is a distraction. Again, I think that's why they're over these populated urban cities, New Jersey, New York. Again, just so they just cause a lot of talking, but I'm going to throw this over to you, Shane, and I'm going to get you to kind of let us know kind of what's going on. For those who don't know what happened over the last week and a half, in Syria, and kind of our role that's been kind of being informed to us, and what we're doing to kind of help orchestrate all this.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, when you look at, you know, where these drones have really been employed, and you know, let's face it, you know, the distraction of, you know, drones with FAA, you know, regulation type lights on them flying over population centers, especially the population centers they're flying over. You know, it's not like they're flying over the Southeast. They're flying over the places where fear mongering and fear porn is absolutely at its all time high all the time. And so, you know, there's more eyes on them. There's more cameras. There's just, you know, you've got millions and millions of people in a densely, you know, packed area like northern New Jersey like that. And this is just one of those things where if it can grab headlines and then flood things like X, which isn't usually flooded with, you know, this type of thing, I think this is actually a new approach for them. So that they can create buzz around something to take our eyes off of the funding that's going into places like Syria. We are now, you know, the Congress and the executive branch have declassified Al-Qaeda basically as a terrorist organization. They are sending aid and reinforcements to these organizations. And I think this is probably something that hits veterans especially much harder than it does the regular population. You know, when you've been on front lines and you've seen your buddies, you know, absolutely been, you know, their lives ripped apart or killed, you get to the point where you're like, you know, we were fighting these guys 10 years ago, less than 10 years ago, you know, and, you know, for us, we've been fighting them since day one in 2003 when we invaded Iraq. You know, this is, you know, AKP and now the organization that is, you know, the quote unquote, you know, administration and Congress are sending these, you know, Al-Qaeda. And let's not forget, you know, I think we sent over $200 million to the Taliban in 2024, quote unquote, accidentally. This is treason in the highest. I mean, it's literally the definition. And it's not being hyperbolic to say these people are aiding and abetting American enemies, guys who have literally killed American military personnel on the battlefield. And this is one of those things that I think is, you know, it's easy to say, but the gravity of the situation is so much bigger than what we're paying attention to and what we're, you know, like what's making headlines right now. These drones are absolutely a distraction. If people understood and you like understood a veteran's heart right now in terms of what this country is doing by funding these people who those families are still mourning, the families of brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and dads that will never ever come home again. Like, this is treason and treachery on the highest magnitude now. And it is on full display for all of America to see. And all they can talk about is drones. It absolutely makes me sick.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you. I mean, literally like when I was in Iraq, one of our platoons was in Al Qaim, which is like right on the border, and they literally used to just cross into Syria because we couldn't engage them there, and they eventually just stayed there, you know. So like, I mean, it's not like it was literally like laughable. Like we would like they would take like, you know, I wasn't in Al Qaim, I was in a different base, but a buddy of mine was there. He would say they'd take pop shots and then just like shoot across the border for safety because we couldn't cross that border. And then lo and behold, you know, years later, it came out that, you know, we supported them across the border. It makes a little bit more sense there. I posted to the Nest, like an article I wrote about, this very, it is treason, you know, because it's important to note, like we aren't gaining anything from this, right? And if I highly encourage you to read Scott Horton's Enough Already, it's a phenomenal book. He posted recently, just a section on Syria, which alone is probably worth reading, but I mean, I consider myself very well read on geopolitics and everything. And just when you hear just so many blatant examples of, you know, these people, they don't even hide it. They come out and they tell it. They can't come out and tell us. They say, yeah, you know, it's not really in our interest, but you know, our buddy over there needs us. And that's what we're doing this for, you know, like we wanted to destabilize, Syria because, they're trying to break the chain between Iran and Hezbollah. So they wanted to support Al-Qaeda, like people that literally kill Americans, and have killed Americans, simply to break the supply or hopefully break. It's not gonna, I don't think Al-Qaeda is gonna stop Iran from funneling weapons into Hezbollah. But, you know, they just wanted to get rid of Assad. They saw him as the Arab ally of Iran and they wanted to get rid of him, to support Israel. So we're helping fund, and we did the same thing in Libya. It's not just there. Libya, we supported, you know, people that were fighting us in Afghanistan. We helped them overthrow, Gaddafi. So we do this time and time again. And it's literally costing us, you know, everything, you know, for the soldiers that go over there, that don't come back, like their families have to suffer through that. You know, and like that doesn't even get like, then you have like the material costs, like we are, bankrupting ourselves. You know, our economy is not the powerhouse it was, and even our military now is being more and more revealed to be a paper tiger, right? Like we you know, we bomb these places, but like objective, like in terms of like achieving some sort of victory, it's elusive because there's nothing for us to win over there, right? Like it's not our interests that are on the line in the Middle East. We're actually hurting our interests because we have people over there fighting and dying. We have them coming home and suffering because of what we ask them to do. And then, we're spending trillions of dollars to do it. And, you know, it's just blatant treason. You know, George Washington warned us in his farewell address that if we allowed for favored nations, you know, there will be people that betray. I'll just read the quote because it's a great quote and it speaks so well to what's going on. A passionate attachment of one nation for another produces a variety of evils and it gives ambitious, corrupted, or deluded citizens who devote themselves to the favored nation facility to betray or sacrifice the interests of their own nation without odium, sometimes even with popularity. That was in 1796. He warned us of this. You know, you don't often hear the whole quote because it's so spot on. It would rattle too many cages. You know, they just say, oh yeah, Washington said we should be an isolationist. Like, no, he warned us what would happen. He warned us that people, you know, would be waving a fucking Israeli flag instead of an American flag when they're running for president. He warned us that they would betray us right out in the open and it would be popular. And that's exactly what's happening today. And you know, it's better than it's been in the past, you know, these past few years. Some people are getting, you know, their eyes opened, but it's not enough. Like, we can't accept this. We have to, like, we shouldn't accept it. We shouldn't accept, you know, the best of us, being sent overseas for, you know, evil men and to contribute to, like, evil shit. That's not what, people are signing up for here in the States.
I just want to, you're 100% spot on, Eomar. I just want to correct one thing. When the establishment and the regime says that it's in their interests, what they mean is it's in corporate interests, not the interests of the nation as a whole, like they're, like our representatives are supposed to be doing. Once you understand that when they say it's in the national security interest of the United States, what they mean is it's in certain corporate interests, then everything makes sense. Then you can believe, then the lies are no longer lies and it makes a lot of sense. But you're 100% right when it has nothing to do with our actual, like, as citizens, how we view the interests. And to talk a little bit more on, Scott Horton's Enough Already book. I mean, it is so insightful. I wish I had had that book. I wish it had already been written when I was in Syria in 2017, because I learned things in that would have been really useful intel, whether it was the DOD or the CIA to have informed me what was going on there. But I had to learn from Scott Horton that the CIA and the DOD had conflicting intel reports because one organization was trying to further the war and one organization wasn't quite ready for a new war yet. So their intel was not quite matching up. I mean, it's just to come back and realize that you were just serving one arm of a duplicit organism who both the left and the right arm, while not working together, certainly were not working for the interests of the entire body. It's just mind blowing. I would definitely recommend going and reading that book.
Yeah. And I mean, I know we've mentioned this before, but it ties back, you know, Smedley Butler warned us in 1935 about what he saw, during World War One and the racket that was created. You know, it shouldn't be surprising that it all kind of ties into that. You know, Wilson campaigned as like a pro peace, you know, keep us out of the war, candidate. And then he gave us everything, in terms of maintaining a warring nation, right? He gave us the Federal Reserve. He gave us the income tax. He dragged us into World War One. He also ignored like some of the commissions that were, established when, during the fall of the Ottoman Empire, like what to do with the nations there, with the people there. He ignored that. And one of the reports said, you know, if we force like a Zionist movement there, it's going to be a source of constant conflict. And it was meant as a warning, but you know, if you're serving the military industrial complex, all you see is, you know, like the golden goose that's just laying you, egg after egg of conflict. So it all kind of ties back into that. You know, it's two sides of the same coin there.
I think the last thing I'd add here is, I think, you know, we've kind of led to believe this lie that, between the CIA, Mossad, and Al-Qaeda, they're all different organizations when I think they've all worked hand in hand, to move the American military around the world. And if you look at it through that lens, you know, of fighting the, Israeli enemies, whether it was, you know, taking a blow, to Saddam Hussein in Iraq or, you know, surrounding the country of Iran with, you know, the war in Afghanistan, you know, you start to understand, you know, through that prism and that worldview that we've been moved and manipulated as a country and as a military for over two decades now, you know, coming up on, you know, 2.5 decades. So this move here, I think, is just to further that. And whoever's in power in Syria, it doesn't matter if they are the lapdogs of the Israelis or Americans, it doesn't matter, or if they're in conflict with them, it gives them the excuse to use further genocidal type tactics within those, you know, within those parameters. So, you know, to wrap it all back to why Bitcoin is so damn important, when we're looking at the bigger picture, you know, Bitcoin helps defund the war machine. As soon as, you know, as soon as we can get closer to a Bitcoin standard and these guys have to play with real money instead of money that somebody can print out of thin air. And let's face it, you know, that's the cabal. That is the banking cabal. We know who all runs that. This takes their power to wage war around the planet nonstop away from them. And that is the goal. I mean, when we're looking at this, it doesn't matter, you know, unequivocally which side it is. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm not pro Hamas because I'm anti-Israel. It is, I am anti-war and I am extremely pro-American. And the fact that, you know, the American people have had to sponsor this kind of thing through their work on a hamster wheel, this Bitcoin is what corrects all of this going forward. And it, you know, it couldn't be more important to a civilization.
Absolutely. And I think we're going to leave it right there, Champ, because you're right. Bitcoin does fix this. It doesn't allow them to get away with this as easily. And it's going to start holding them more accountable.
I'm going to take a quick second to shill one of my shirts I made, which is literally "Choose Bitcoin, not war." And it's inspired by that very, reality, you know, like that, you know, and that's really what pushed me, just to tie this off, it's really what pushed me, it was like the final push into Bitcoin was when I realized, like, hey, like, this is a way to stop supporting all this mayhem. It was like the final nudge that I needed to, you know, start allocating a lot more of my resources into Bitcoin. So that is like the, you know, I'd say like if it was just an investment vehicle, I wouldn't care this much, right? I wouldn't be sitting here, day after day talking about it. It's everything else that it brings to the table. You know, like I can make decent returns on the stock exchange. That's fine, but everything else that this brings to the table, and like we talk about conviction, even if it's like a slim chance, I think the chance is growing more and more every day. But even if it were like that slim, tiny chance of it disrupting this system, that's worth it to me, you know, to give it a shot, because that's, you know, you talk about ways of protest and ways of bringing about change. I think Bitcoin is the most effective one, and it's becoming closer and closer to a reality.
I can't speak for all of Bitcoin veterans, like the individuals in it. But, for me, a big part of what Bitcoin veterans is this fight for peace, to defund the military industrial complex, to defund all this evil and promote peace, love, prosperity. So like exactly what Eomar said, I would not care this much if it didn't go way beyond just, you know, material wealth, like all that. I guess it's a nice thing to pass on to my kids, but if it ends the evil and the corruption and the war, then that alone is a technology that I will support and defend.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a perfect way to end it right there, Jordan. Again, this Bitcoin fixes this, and that is why we're so passionate with what we do here. And we do it daily. We do this every Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Again, I highly encourage if you've been on the fringe, on the outskirts, to come to be a part of this. Be a part of something that's going to be lasting, and that, again, you wake up and you feel good knowing that, you know what, I'm a part of this group. I'm part of this organization. I'm a part of a core Bitcoiners that are going to make a lasting impression in a positive way in the world. And again, just look back. If you doubt anything, look back what we did with Operation Gabriel. Again, no one told us to go do anything. No one begged us. We saw what was happening, and we said we couldn't sit on the sidelines. And through your generosity, again, we raised over $110,000 We have that money. It's still being utilized, and we're going to be using it for other relief and rescue efforts. So again, I highly encourage you to come and reach out to us. And I'm going to challenge you over the Christmas break to start inviting your friends and family and coworkers to start joining this space. Again, a lot of people like to try something new on January 1st. I don't recommend that. I say if you want to make a change, start today. Why put something off for tomorrow? But again, a lot of people feel that they have to wait till the 1st. So on the 1st, tell them to start joining this space. Bring them in here. So that'll be my challenge for you this week. But that's all I have. Tomorrow's episode, we're going to have Zach, who is one of the Samurai developers. He's going to be joining us talking about the legal case that's going on. And we'll be able to dive into that. So it'll be a really good show. I'll have the link for it coming up after this. So make sure you tune in. And tonight, 7 p.m. Eastern, we have Jack Donovan, author of The Way of Man, join the video pod. We'll have links for that as well. This is already up in the nest, but we'll go ahead and post it to the top of the page. That's it. You guys have a fantastic day and go crush it. But don't shitcoin. It's like using dial-up internet to stream a 4K movie. And I apologize. I didn't thank everybody for tuning in. I really do appreciate you all listening, especially Shane, Jordan, Bob, Eomar, AC. I really do like that you guys joined up here and contributed to a great discussion today. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.